In every age, God raises people up to speak the truth to the world in a way that is currently relevant. Though our opinions should not be held with the same esteem as the biblical canon, we still carry the hope of Christ to the world. Our society has forgotten what it means to follow Christ. The bright lights of truth seekers are barely visible in the dim twilight of a post-Judeo-Christian society. We all see the darkness coming. All we can hope is to share the light that He has entrusted to us. This is Modern Apocrypha.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Modern Apocrypha.
Welcome, everybody.
So today I wanted to go over something that has been happening the past few days that a lot of people have been really upset about. And like, you remember Joey Carrion. Joey came on here, I think, not that long ago. And I consider him a friend.
Sure.
And he and I went at it for a while yesterday. And this all stems from the interview that Daryl Cooper, also known as Martyr Maid with the Martyr Maid podcast, did with Tucker Carlson. Now, in the course of the interview, backing up just a little bit, there's something that you have to understand here. Daryl Cooper is actually anti-Semitic. He actually has a problem with the Jews. And where I get that certainty is... I was watching his Twitter the other day, or several months ago now, and he was talking about the current conflict between Israel and the Hamas in Gaza, and he was talking about how it's all Israel's fault, and how, you know, he was very firmly on that side, and I pointed out, dude, Egypt has a border with them. They won't take any of them in. There is something seriously wrong with the culture of the people from that place to the point where nobody wants anything to do with them. Nobody. No Middle Eastern nation will take them in. None.
It's odd, though, because they do send populations. They've got three times the population outside of the West Bank than in the West Bank, so they do get out of there.
Yeah, they do. But
it's strange, again, right? I mean, it's a fact.
Well...
I
know there's some movement, but what I'm getting at here is that the culture there is so bad and so violent and so messed up that nobody will take those people. And yet a huge number of people, of Americans, of whoever, blame Israel for the whole situation completely because Israel is somehow bigger and stronger, when the reality is the Hamas has always basically seen only a one-state solution. From the river to the sea, we're going to wipe Israel off the map and genocide them. That is the only end that they are willing to accept. Israel would have accepted a peaceful solution, but the Hamas would not, and there's a lot of people who won't admit that. Okay.
Sure.
And Daryl Cooper is one of them.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to get back to Mr. Cooper, the longstanding situation in the around Jerusalem is so old and multifaceted that that's an episode in and of itself. Back to Mr. Cooper though.
He's blaming them
as the current strong man in the area.
No, he blames Israel for about everything. He is genuinely anti-Semitic. He's not honest. But he is also one of the best popular historians that we have in America. Like, people listen to him, and what he has to say and the episodes he does are genuinely interesting. And if you listen to the interview he did with Tucker, you understand why. He does thousands and thousands of hours of research to put out 10 hours worth of content. So, like, he distills a huge amount of knowledge down into a very short period. And one of the things he tries to do is to understand why both sides are doing what they're doing. The one blind spot that I have found that he has is that he is anti-Semitic. Now, when he had this conversation with Tucker, one of the things that they talked about was World War II and Hitler. And Daryl Cooper came right out and said that he thinks Winston Churchill is the villain of World War II.
Okay.
And he backed it up a little bit, but he kind of explained, and he's going to be doing a series on it, he said. And then he started talking about what Germany did. And he said, you know, Germany, one of the things they really did wrong was they started this invasion to the east without having anything to do with the people they were going to capture. They had nothing to do with them, meaning they had nowhere to put them, nothing to, you know, no way to deal with the huge number of people they were going to displace. And so that was on Germany. And that's as far as he went when it comes to criticizing Germany or anything they did. He wouldn't go any further than that. Okay, so from those things, I can see that Daryl Cooper has a spiritual blindness. He has given in to the anti-Semitic, anti-God's people. He's against God's people. Even though he claims to be a Christian, he's against God's people, Israel. And in every way, when he examines their activities or Zionism or anything, he very much does not do them justice. He is not fair with them. And that to me is beyond question. That's just true. But then after he had this interview with Tucker, a lot of people who had never heard of him before are coming out and calling Tucker evil for talking to him.
Interesting. A lot of that happens, though. I mean, anybody that's not on your side talking to a source that gets throughput and has more ears here, it makes that side mad, right? You really don't want people to hear.
Yeah, but it isn't just that. There's more to it. And I tried to impress this on Joey later on, and I don't know whether he heard me or not. He was arguing against me to the very end instead of hearing my point.
Okay.
Because when it comes down to it, I don't have any argument with the fact that Daryl Cooper is anti-Semitic and he hates the Jews because he hates the Jews, and he's not entirely honest about it, probably because he doesn't see it clearly, and that's kind of gross. But to me, that's like saying Dave Rubin is a homosexual, and that's kind of gross. And hopefully God gets to him and draws him in and you know, deals with that evil, because that's kind of gross. It's like, to me, you can't take one kind of evil and make it something that you totally freak out about and another kind of evil and not freak out about it. But everybody is doing that. And this is the thing that I wanted to sort of get your feedback on before we get too far into this is, it, what do you think the deal is, or how do you look at that when a lot of people look at one kind of bad thing and another kind of bad thing, and they're both bad things, and they totally freak out and lose their crap about one, and the other, they don't even seem to, like, it's just kind of part of the scenery to them. Yeah, they'll acknowledge that it's bad, but it isn't worth being angry about.
Well, I think that that's every single human being, that there's not a human being that's not horrible, and that we're ignoring some sort of evil out of everyone, but we're deciding which things we're ignoring. But there's nobody that's perfect except for Jesus. So
right, I agree with that. The question is, what is the deal with people just considering some kinds of evil part of the scenery and totally freaking out about other kinds, and to the point where they're... Yeah.
Novelty and personal threat. Novelty and personal threat. Whenever you're evil, or your mistakes, or your when I'm trying to think of the statement, birds come home to roost. Crows, what is it?
Chickens?
Chickens come home to roost? Dear God. Whatever. Whenever you fear your retribution, you fear your punishment, you fear that your evil is going to be discovered, you get defensive, because you assume through your natural blindness that you aren't evil.
Yeah, but there's something opposite to that too, and that's what I'm seeing here. It's like I have a cousin who one time was telling me how he couldn't understand how someone could be a serial killer, and that those people, there is just something fundamentally different about them. And I told him, no, that's not true. It was like he couldn't understand that kind of evil. And so he totally, you know, it's alien, it's foreign. And
I do think
this is the sort of thing I'm seeing.
Yeah, I do think that serial killers are, again, a spectrum of definition. If you get someone like Charles Manson, who survived in prison for many, many years and all of that, he's not a normal biological specimen. He's not normal. Hitler wasn't normal. His brain was getting chewed up by syphilis. That was physical degradation.
Well, I mean, that's true. But by the same token, there is a process by which people are little boys and they grow up to be big, scary, evil men who are actually human monsters. And when they were a little boy, they weren't a monster. And when they're a grown man, they're a monster. And it isn't that there's something different about those people. It's that something happened to them and in their life and in their brain and whatever that took them from being an innocent little kid to being a monster. And we all have the capacity for that inside of us.
There are two different things to consider here, because there's the normal biology, the normal person that does get born, they're cranky or they're great, whatever personality they begin with, and then they're skewed by the way their parents treat them and their environments and where they sit in the hierarchy and all of those sorts of things. But then you do get the true, just everything's fine, everything's normal, but that guy likes to eat people because he's crazy. So there are two kinds.
Okay, no, that's not true.
You don't think that there are just out and out whack jobs that nothing.
I know for a fact that there are not. Now, there are people who have tendencies. We all have tendencies toward different kinds of evil, right? Like my tendency to do bad things looks different from yours. My tendency is a different kind of tendency. So if you were to feed mine, you would find that I am a serial rapist and murderer. Because I was on that road when I was a teenager. I know from the inside what it feels like to be on that path. Now, I never actually hurt anybody. Thank you, God, for that. Thank you, God, that he saved me before that. But before you ever met me, I was in such a dark place in my head that I was on the road to be that. And so I can understand what it's like. And by the way, in case anybody wonders, what happened was I wanted it. I wanted to be that. I genuinely was that was the where I wanted to be.
You had somehow, I prayed to God, lifted up and exalted the Moriarty character.
Not exactly that. We could go into it sometime. What that looked like from the inside, but bottom line was, I prayed to God and I said, Lord, I don't want you to take this from me, but please take it. And within 2 weeks, over a course of about 2 weeks, the darkness that had been over my mind, that had been consuming me for as long as I could remember, was lifted. It was, and I was more or less the person that you know now after that. And before that, I was a very different person. You know, I've changed some since because we all mature and grow. But
sure.
But my basic makeup was very similar after that to what you know now. And before that, it was not. So I know what that's like from the inside. And I can tell you right now, I understand the sequence of events that leads someone into that place mentally and emotionally. And so, yeah, he's crazy and eats people, but what got him there? Because he was not, God did not make him broken. God did not make him damaged. God did not make him bad. God made him with the intent that he would be good. And there were other choices that got made, both by him and the people around him. And he wound up being really, really bad. Okay, so what I'm wondering, taking this back to the original topic a bit here, is in the case of somebody like Hitler, when somebody like Darryl Cooper comes out and says, Winston Churchill was the bad guy, Hitler was kind of just a figurehead. He wasn't really the driving force.
He was the Biden of his era.
I mean, Cooper likes to point the finger at a lot of people other than the Germans for what happened. And there's reason for that. You have to understand what happened with World War I turned Germany into a basket case nation that had to do something to come back from the hell that they got put into economically because of the reparations that they were required to pay as part of the peace settlement from World War I. What happened there was bound to cause some kind of hell. And I think that was because spiritual beings were interfering. That was enemy action that did that, I think.
Sure.
But
well, and it was certainly not fair what happened to Germany throughout World War I and the way that it began, the way that it was put on them as some sort of fault whenever they were attacked to steal the technology of diesel engines. Germany was attacked to steal diesel as a technology and then blamed for fighting back.
Well, interesting. I hadn't heard that take before. But either way, the point is, what happened with World War II, there was something that was bound to go on there. There is always, how do I put this? There is always a reason that human beings go bad. There is always a reason that human beings do what they do. We always have had a choice. And some people make good choices, some people make bad choices. In Germany's case, they had a deck stacked against them after World War I that was pretty gross. And so I don't know what blame lies where, but I will tell you this, that the idea that when somebody looks at things in a way that is different from normal, and we can look at that person, Daryl Cooper, and say, yeah, he has these anti-Semitic tendencies, and that's not good. That's a bad thing. But it's like Martin Luther had anti-Semitic tendencies, too. Do we consider him a villain of history? Well, no, he was a complicated person, same as we all are. We're all complicated people. So the question is, why is it that a lot of the conservative Christian sphere saw this interview with Tucker and just totally freaked out and started screaming about what had happened? Just the conversation.
Just the idea of formatting someone that is viewed as anti-Semitic. Is he viewed as anti-Semitic by the world?
I don't know how people view him, Greg. I think he is anti-Semitic. There is no question. So to say that people understand that, who have some discernment, that doesn't surprise me.
Sure. You know, and for people to jump on it so broadly, he's probably stepping on someone's financial toes presently. And
no, no, you're misunderstanding. It was not until he had this interview with Tucker and then the whole Christian sphere of Twitter exploded. Why is it that anti-Semitism freaks them out, but they accept so many other things that are more present danger to them that are more bad? What's the deal with that? I have an idea, but I don't have an answer.
I think that it's learned behavior. You know, you are wild and free and running as a child until your parents, you know, smack you and say, look both ways before crossing the road. You get smacked enough times, you learn that one. So you've learned
and
that.
And so what you're saying,
never forget.
Just to make sure that I understand what you're saying is that our society, the culture, has programmed people to hate what happened in World War II, specifically with Hitler and anti-Semitism, to such a degree that it causes a reflexive freak out when that norm is questioned.
Correct. And for good reason, because we really do have a vast swath of some of the most successful Jews in the world in our country. Right? We've made a lot of successful Jews. So getting on their bad side is a bad idea. You know, you really could lose your job. You really could lose funding. You really could lose advertisers. Disney did it to Elon Musk. And I've made this joke before, just because Johnny Depp can get away with it, just because Elon Musk can get away with it, just because the richest, most famous, most intelligent man can get away with it, doesn't mean that the average guy thinks he can.
Interesting. I don't, I don't know. You know, I can see three or four possible sources for it. I agree with you at least partially that I think that some of the reason for it is that programming, that cultural programming that gets so instilled in us. I think that that unthinking reaction is a big deal.
Sure. And then the second one, if I look at everything about my culture and what I like and what I think and my truth, right? What makes sense to me in the world. And I look at what a Jew says about their worldview and what exists in the world, I'm on their side. We think the same way. Whereas the people that complain about them probably want to behead me. They probably want to scalp me. They probably want to barbarically kill me in some way. So I obviously react badly to people that are on that side that also want to barbarically kill me. So there's that.
That's true. I mean, I have problems with that too. I don't particularly want, I got to be honest with you. I'll just come right out and say it. I think Islam is evil, and any foray of that into my sphere is something that I will not put up with any more than I have to. I am not tolerant. I am not tolerant of Islam. There is no tolerating that crap.
All righty.
So, yeah. So I don't know, man. I just think it looks to me like that reaction that people are having is, it's an interesting phenomenon, if nothing else. It's worth noting. And I actually, after the break, which is coming up in not too long here, I want to go into my thoughts on why that happens and on what the healthy way to look at the whole situation is, because I think actually there's something to learn there. And I did a Twitter thread about it that was pretty good, and we can get into that after the break. Anyway,
I would throw in there also maybe a little bit of patriotism, because there is a pinch of patriotism in American Zionism.
Yeah, there is. I do think, though, that there's, I don't know how to put this into words exactly. It's like there's this thing that is spiritually driven as well, where it's some part of the dialectic, or it's related to the dialectic, where the enemy has allowed this this valid critique of the anti-Semitic and straight up Jew hatred that went on during World War II that caused the Holocaust to,
I've been doing a fair amount of research on that and not finding a good answer.
Well, the enemy has allowed that worldview to sit for a very long time, partially to lull people into a false sense of security about it, because it's one of those things where Israel is God's chosen people. And when people are influenced by the enemy, one of the things that they're going to do is they're going to hate God's people because they hate God. And that's just a normal sort of thing. So the fact that it has been so long since that really reared its head in a serious way is really interesting to me. And it doesn't surprise me to see that it's starting to poke its head up again, because we know that by the end of the age, by the time Jesus comes back the second time, the entire world is going to turn on Israel. Everybody is going to turn on Israel, basically. And that's not,
yeah, it's a little bit troubling on the interpretation of Revelation there, just because it's hard to remember a time when the whole world didn't turn its back on the Israelites. When was that not true?
Well, the U.S. has been the dominant world power for a long time, and we have supported them for most of that time.
The reason that the state of Israel was necessary was because not even America would take the Jews.
I mean, I don't disagree with that, but in the time
since... We have the documentation. Yeah.
In the time since then, though, America has given money disproportionately to and supported Israel disproportionately ever since basically the 1950s. So for seven years.
I'm getting an airplane overhead here. I'm sorry if you guys can hear it. What I'm curious on that, though, is whether or not that is a general American federal policy of action, or if that's the individuals that are successful in America sending money back home.
It doesn't matter, man.
Okay.
You ask the question, that's the answer. It
would be a question of whether or not the state of America, the bureaucracy of America, the nation of America did it, or if the individual religious people...
What does that mean? The people of America make up the state of America. The general opinion in America has been strong enough in support of Israel for 70 years to make it so that we have supported them disproportionately and hugely. Was it just individuals or was it the state? I mean, well, what's the difference at that point? You got 70 years worth of it happening.
Treaties, laws, acceptance of change of borders, our consulate and their engine, right?
But you know, 70 years is a long time, and we've been spending a lot of money there. Now, there are other reasons. I mean, you and I have argued about the American Empire thing a lot, and I think that part of the reason is that they were a keynote of our imperial presence in that part of the world. But
again, well, and it's crazy that people look at that, and this is a tangent from what we're talking about at the moment, but sure, the idea of the American Empire being something like Pax Romana, where Rome had fallen, but all these disparate forces that were against each other wanted to have some way to communicate and trade with each other, so they stayed Pax Romana despite the fall of Rome. People don't want no empire. They want an excuse that I'm not allowed to shoot you, despite the fact that I'm supposed to want to shoot you because that's what my culture says I'm supposed to want, but I really just want to get this bread and give you this oil so that we can survive, right? So the idea of the word empire being used on us conveniently, as opposed to where there's been some CIA action and some individual businessmen that have done some incredibly horrible things, whether or not they were Americans doing it or, right, it's not America doing it.
I don't know. That's a question for another time. And actually, you ought to listen to some of Mike Benz's recent stuff, because I don't see how you listen to any of that and don't come to the conclusion that America is an empire. Either way, though, it is time to go to break. Shall we do that real quick?
Yeah, we'll go ahead and take a quick pause. We'll be back in a minute, guys.
All right. As you can probably tell from the backdrop, there are new things happening here. This is my new sound studio for recording audiobooks. It's not quite done, but it's done enough that I can record an ad in it, and that's exciting. I also have an anthology that I'm just finishing now. It should be coming out real soon. I have book 2 in the Bright Star series is basically finished, other than some professional edits and the publishing, and I'm pushing on that pretty hard. I'm hoping that there will be news on that one in the near future. When it comes to audiobooks, I'm planning on recording both the anthology and Bright Star. And folks, I need support and help now more than ever. Bright Star is doing just fine. I'm perfectly happy with it, and I am expanding both my ground game and my marketing game, and things are just growing. But the best recommendation is a recommendation from a friend. So if you like what you see on Modern Apocrypha, take this as a recommendation to you. Bright Star is worth your time. And if you've read it and you like it, recommend it to somebody. Help me out getting the word out about this series. And be on the lookout. More's coming soon. Energemetra6.com, e6universe.com, promo code Israel, 10% off.
Hello, Modern Apocrypha listeners. I'd like to take a moment to lift up North Arrow Coffee. If you're like me, you enjoy quite a bit of coffee, and North Arrow has a lot of really good coffees. But they're also following their very own North Star to support pro-life organizations. At North Arrow, 15% of all sales go towards life, not just for a limited time, but for a reason. So, if you'd like to support the podcast, you can use the code E6 at the North Arrow web store and save 10% today. Thank you.
And we're back.
Welcome back, everyone.
So I thought to start this segment, I would just read this Twitter thread that I created real quick and sort of explain why I say what I do, maybe a little more directly, if it doesn't make sense. So the what I started with was, there's a real danger in dismissing Hitler as an evil piece of shit, and we're starting to see the effect of that. And don't misunderstand, he was evil, and recognizing that is necessary. The problem comes when, instead of understanding evil, we dismiss it as alien to us. Example, the most ardent Trump supporters are those who once hated him as evil, then came to understand that he's not so bad after all. And you know what? He even makes some good points. And where I'm going with this is that we humans are creatures of extremes and pendulum swings, and that's where the problem is. So what I'm getting at here is that, and there's more to read, but what I'm getting at here is that once we start to see that the picture isn't as black and white as we thought, we tend to start falling the other direction. And a lot of the world is going to start doing that here, where when you look at World War II and you see that it isn't as black and white as people thought it was, they're going to start going, well, if the story I was told wasn't 100% true, maybe the bad guys really were the good guys. It really opens people up to that, because that's the way we as human beings tend to operate. Anyway, continuing. When I was in college, I read the book Ordinary Men by Christopher Browning. It's a nonfiction book that shows clearly what it was like to be on a Nazi death squad and how ordinary people, first responders, could be turned into murder machines. It was incredibly dark, of course. What the book did accomplish, though, is to help me see from the inside how I, me, not some other person, could become murderous, unfeeling, and evil. I also saw, until you, meaning any person, undergoes that exercise, that we're all vulnerable to becoming an evil monster without even knowing it. So the best way to deal with the whole Nazi thing is to actually help people to understand what drove it and what was behind it and what it was like to be that. And then you inoculate them against it instead of this.
What have you found about that
response?
What have you been able to find about that? I can't figure out anything.
About what?
When we had the expulsion of the Jews from not just Germany, but Russia and all over, everywhere, the pogroms, just everywhere, all at once. What the hell happened?
That was obviously driven by spiritual forces, dude. You don't get that kind of massive wave of things without it. I don't think you're going to find any explanation other than that. But what I was getting at was not that at all. It was, what did it take for a first responder, a paramedic, to become the people who are killing the Jews, whose job is to go out and go into a town and eliminate the Jews from that town? Because these weren't specially trained soldiers. These weren't specially picked or anything. They were just first responders. They were just firefighters and paramedics and stuff who basically got left with the job, and the orders came down from above, and nobody was even required to do it. There was no consequences for people who walked away, but only a very few people walked away.
And you're confused by this?
No, I'm not now.
Okay.
I mean,
because this makes perfect sense.
Okay, well, but reading the book, the whole point I'm making here is that reading the book taught me very clearly, it made a case in point to me that nobody is immune to that unless they have essentially subjected themselves to the pressure of understanding the evil within themselves so that they know where and when they have to stand up in order to not fall under that. Because the only people who actually stand up under that are people who have beforehand said, no, I am not going to be that. Whatever pressure is brought to bear on me, I'm not going to be that. That I'm not going to be.
Yeah, and the forethought on it really does help. But
that was only half the thread, but go ahead. Any thoughts so far? Go ahead.
Well, and I feel like the simple answer is ignorance gets you there, because almost always what they're telling you is something like the electric study, where you tell someone that you're helping them by shocking them, and you shock them because you're being told you're being helpful. This is a common enough thing that somebody in a white jacket tells you to do something that's helpful, and you blindly follow it.
I understand what you're saying. That had nothing to do with what was going on in that situation, though.
Something about not looking at the overall world and the overall place in it, right? You're only looking at a very small sliver and looking at an improvement in some way, right? Again, spiritual.
Well, the reason
attack.
Most of these people did it was basically peer pressure. It was, if I leave, I'm leaving my buddies behind. If I leave, I'm being disloyal to my tribe, to my people, my paramedics, my first responders, and that was why they did it.
And there, yeah, it's very odd to me that there's no connection to, I don't know, the dehumanizing factor of the people that you're going after not being a part of your group. Like there's no friends of your kid. Right, there had to be.
I mean, there had to be. There was. The whole society was getting that dehumanizing rhetoric spread through it at the time. And so seeing the Jews as being less than human was common for that group at that time because of all the rhetoric. There's no question that was going on. But the reason most people who did not have any penalty for not walking away didn't walk away was because it would have meant abandoning their people, the people who were their group that were doing the thing.
Sure.
Well, anyway, moving on here, yeah. Because this is sidetracking, and I don't want to get sidetracked too much. So that was number 4 of like 8 in this thread.
Okay.
So please, here's the danger. Sorry?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get through all that.
Yeah. Certainly. So here's the danger. No one is the villain in his own eyes. That means there is a way that we can each arrive at a place where we are a villain and we don't even realize it. This is why I say it's dangerous to dismiss Hitler or anyone else as evil without understanding. If we don't understand evil, then we are vulnerable to becoming it. In this case, the danger I see is that when people start to actually examine pre-World War II Germany and what led up to the Holocaust, they'll also see the validity of some of the stances those human beings held. Once you or I start to recognize that someone we thought was completely evil actually has a valid point, we have a tendency to fall to a pendulum swing and say to ourselves, but if he was right about that, what if he was right about everything? And so here's my summary of that chunk of the thread. Hitler was not right about everything, but he had reasons for the positions he held, and those reasons are actually comprehensible and in some cases valid. The question is how we went from having valid issues and problems to becoming an evil monster. So the core of that particular thing is the Jewish problem. We've talked about this some, but I would like to read one last, and this is a much longer segment, but before we do that, just wrapping up that bit about that, is there anything that you have to add there?
No, let's continue.
All right. The Jewish problem. So there are three things here. First, we face real spiritual beings as our enemies. They hate God and everything he loves. And two, God chose one special nation to be his people, and God never, ever takes back a promise or reneges. He just doesn't. Three, the Jews are blessed by God, even when they are not doing right in his eyes. So with those three things, and I could read the rest of this, but basically the core of what I'm saying here is that because God is blessing the Jews, and because, as you said, there are a whole lot of powerful people in this country who are Jewish, it's because God blesses them wherever they go, whatever they do. He disproportionately blesses his chosen nation. And that's easy to resent and to have a problem with when you start to realize it, which is why we see this thing where people hate how the Jews are in control of the media and all of society, and there's this big conspiracy thing going on. And it's not really true, but that's sort of the bite to it is that God really is blessing these people, even when they don't do things that are good.
Sure.
And we've had the discussion previously that there's no homogenous group. So there may be, there may be some conspiratorial individuals in the overall, but we're talking about millions of people over thousands of years. Of course, there's going to be some bad eggs.
Of course. Yeah. Well, and we even know, picking there on Soros. Some really, really bad eggs. Yeah.
Picking on Soros.
Oh, there are a number of people you could pick on.
Sure.
I would actually start with Kissinger, but you know, anyhow, no, what the whole point of this to me though, is this dynamic that we've got going on in our society where because the subject was laid to rest and has become sort of this reactionary thing where anytime you accept any valid thoughts that they were complicated people, they were humans too, they weren't just straight up evil and different from everybody, then people start to scream about it. And what's going to come out of that, in my opinion, is that we're going to have a situation where more and more people look at it and go, what is it that they're trying to protect us from? What truth are they hiding by having that reaction? Because that reaction isn't a natural reaction. And the only time we have that reaction is when there is some truth there that they're trying to hide from us. So what's the truth? Which then puts people on the track to having this tendency to fall into an anti-Semitic trap, giving the enemy room in their lives to have a spiritual claim over them to make them blind the same way Daryl Cooper is blind. Because that's how that happens, is people become blind to it because they spiritually open themselves up to the enemy's making it so they can't see things. And that's what I see going on. So the only way I know to deal with that, number one, when somebody brings up points like Daryl Cooper does, you have to start out by just acknowledging, yeah, he's definitely anti-Semitic. He does not have a fair or valid perspective when it comes to the Jews. Two, there are other things that he's saying that are true. The situation isn't simple. And what tends to happen when you get too far into the weeds is you lose perspective on the whole situation and you lose perspective on the evil that really did happen. That doesn't mean that there weren't valid things that people had as concerns in Germany, because if you look at what happened in World War I, the whole nation was basically repressed. They got the shitty end of the stick, man. And so to say that wasn't valid somehow for them to feel like they were pushed down, of course it was. But where it ended was really horrible. And what they did, the Holocaust was real and it was terrible. And it was, you know, it was really awful, but that doesn't mean that the situation wasn't still complicated. It was complicated. And when we have people like Daryl Cooper starting to ask those questions and make those claims about people like Churchill, we have to actually sit down and listen to the...
For anyone that did not listen to the interview, and I did not, what was the specific fault of Churchill?
Basically, Daryl Cooper accused him of engineering the whole thing, of engineering World War II. And what he says is that if Churchill had been willing to just let things end, then America and Russia would never have gotten involved. The war would have ended much sooner. And it was only because Hitler wouldn't stop bombing Germany, wouldn't let it go, that things kept going. And he points out that Hitler was part of the Admiralty in World War I, and he was responsible for, I can't bring the name of the engagement to mind right now, but it was a pretty serious black eye. He was responsible for screwing things up really bad. And so the fact that he didn't, Cooper thinks that some of his motivation was sort of, he felt like he had to redeem himself by fixing the situation, and he kind of hated Germany anyway. And, you know, to some degree that may be true. I don't know, but
Well, these things were so complicated. Heinrich
exactly.
Diesel, Heinrich Diesel from Germany was the cousin and blood relative of the Queen of England, and it's all just a family squabble at its base level.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know what? When you say it's complicated, that's so much of an understatement. It is so complicated, and that's not even taking into account the powers and principalities and rulers and the beings that are responsible for directing the things. And so when you put the blame for a war on one person, you're doing something wrong, whether it's Hitler or Churchill. That's not the way this works. These are all
sure
outgrowths of spiritual things as well. And a lot of emphasis has to be placed on that. And so what I'm the conclusion that I'm driving at here, and then I will try not to hog the mic quite so much, but the conclusion that I'm driving at here is that the only way that we can properly counter this new set of questions that's coming in that is trying to legitimize anti-Semitism, because that in the end is going to be the goal. It's going to legitimize hating God's people. The only way to deal with that is to sort of not to immediately start screaming when people bring up questions that are valid questions, but to actually have to refute them, to actually have to calmly and, you know, reasonably deal with the things they're saying.
Absolutely. I do think the obvious danger for a Semite is, or a Christian, is that we hold ourselves separate, right? You guys can do what you're going to do, but we're going to be better. You guys can do what you're going to do, but we're taking Saturday off. Whatever it is, we are separate. And that doesn't work with a communist, right? That doesn't work when everybody must be a part of the group. So if we start having some sort of American patriotism, America first thing, you're never going to get the Jews to throw in the towel on Israel. Good luck. Right.
Well, or hopefully there will also be a number of Christians who say, you know what? This whole Christian nationalism thing you got going isn't Christian. And the nationalism part is a little bit broken. And I don't want to be a part of that because, right, like you say, we're supposed to hold ourselves separate. We're supposed to do and to be salt and light.
So that fundamental headbutt against an authoritarian groupthink bubble, right? Mm-hmm. It is fundamentally against that. You can never get everybody on board. You're going to have caste groups of here's these people over here, these people over there. Even in a place as close together as New York, they're still separated out by streets, right? So trying to stamp that down to zero will be a horrible, horrible sight.
Well, and I don't know. You know, we'll just have to see. It all comes back to when you're saying it will be a horrible sight. It all comes back to this whole one hand of the dialectic versus the other, the one hand, the dark hand of the path versus the light hand of the path, the great awakening versus the great reset, and how much will the great awakening try to enforce itself on people, and how much will it just be
so much
an
better
attractive lie come. And right. And I don't know what it's going to look like. I can guess, but my guess is just going to be a shot in the dark.
Certainly not something that I'm going to bet the farm on.
Yeah. So anyway, the whole subject I wanted to talk about was just that I see this knee-jerk reaction against this thing is actually being counterproductive. It's actually bad to do what people do when they do things like they say Tucker is evil for having Daryl Cooper on. Tucker is genuinely evil, and we should all denounce him for having Daryl Cooper on. And I go, no, that's actually really bad. Don't go there.
Well, and the idea that you might denounce Daryl Cooper coming on is not the same thing as putting a you know, free speech outlet out of business by abandoning them. But you can say, I didn't like that guest.
I'm That's absolutely right. Well, and I have my problems with Daryl Cooper. I've stated it, right? But I also will stick to the fact that he is one of the best popular historians that America has right now, because a lot of what he has to say is different from the narrative that we're used to, and it has valid points to it. He doesn't just spin lies like a lot of the left's popular historians do.
It comes to mind presently, there was a similar reaction to Terrence Howard bringing up new ideas. And you know, you shouldn't just out throw out everything. You have to verify it. Anybody could say something true. It's up to you to make sure it's true, right? It doesn't matter who said it. So,
yeah, that's true. Well, and you know, I never heard anything about the Terrence Howard thing except through you. So
I'm still hearing.
It wasn't. Well, I understand that you are, but the circles that I'm plugged into, barely made a ripple.
Right, but in the Ecclesiastes of the Academy, he threatens their respect. Right? How could we be in the same?
Okay. Well, maybe that's why I don't care, because I find them to be pretty much contemptible and beneath my notice anyway.
Well, that is typically what I would suggest for people in the academic space when they're getting all that sort of headbutting, is that there has not been a great scientist that was not pooped on his whole career and usually accepted after he was dead, because these people are insane.
Yeah, that's true. And the other, you know, that's true in a lot of ways for basically anybody who contributes something really worthwhile to the discussion. Usually they are pretty much hated for their career and only accepted afterward.
Or ignored, you know, just not verified to be correct. That happens constantly, constantly.
Yeah, it does.
I have a fun free time thing that I'll look up, which is, Tesla, the creator of the Webster's Dictionary, just where do some of these things come from? And it's always some guy that just has had a terrible time with it. It's never, Merriam-Webster was the rich guy that put it on paper. The crazy guy in jail that was forced to kill people in war, and because he was forced to become a murderer, went psycho and spent 15 years in jail to protect himself from killing himself. So, and he wrote the Webster's Dictionary. He researched 15,000 words a day. It was ridiculous. But he gets no credit.
Interesting.
Right?
Yeah. Interesting.
So these sort of things are certainly out there. Whenever someone blows up about, oh, how could you listen to, I want to pick in there and say, which parts were the parts that were so true that they gotcha?
Well, and that's the response I should have given. Which parts of what he said were so true that it offended you? Because it isn't and the answer will be, but it's not true. It's, and I would say, well, actually there is truth in it. And the fact that there is truth in it is going to draw people in. And so what are you going to do about it? Are you just going to scream and yell and try to be a gatekeeper? Because that's not going to work. Gatekeeping ideas guarantees that people will pick them up and run with them.
Well, we're currently going through that now with the Unabomber. He had interesting ideas. And people would discount all of his ideas because he was crazy. But if you really look at his situation, he was crazy because of a drug overdose from the college that he attended. Right? They messed him up on purpose in a government test. And then he went crazy and hurt some people. But the things he was saying...
He got LSD'd and MK Ultra.
Right. So his ideas were outside of that, separate from that, right? Maybe seen through the lens of, but that wouldn't make the... That wouldn't make the thing seen less valid. I would look at it the way that whenever a child comes to you and says, I saw, you know, the Bigfoot, or I saw the ice cream truck. You don't need to worry about that child's validity of their experience or their intelligence. It's literally, did you see it or didn't you see it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be some of the issues with someone like that's given you perturbations about what they're saying. You might not like their personality, but that doesn't change the fact of, you know, what's true and what's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we're coming up on the end of the time. I don't know if there's anything more you want to add. We can, but we've got almost enough time in here to make it an episode. How about we just call it?
I think we should call this one. I have a whole nother topic I want to tug your ear on. So stay tuned to the next episode, everyone.
All right. We'll catch you next time, folks.
Till next time, everyone. Thank you.